And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, thanks for tuning in for hour number two of Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. This is Tony Beam, Vice President for Student Life and Christian Worldview at North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference and where we're cultivating transformational leaders for the church and society. My co-host is Hannah Miller.
Outspokenly opinionated and unashamedly conservative, this is Hannah Miller, informed and unafraid.
And if you're having a birthday today, you know what that makes you. That makes you a celebrity on your birthday, and we say this to you.
Happy birthday!
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you're a celebrity, and you share a celebrity birthday with Robert Blake, who was born in 1933. Mr. Beretta. Those of you who remember that TV show. Frankie Avalon was born in 1939. Carrie Livgren of Kansas, lead singer, was born in 1949. Lance Armstrong was born in 1971. And Dee Dee Ramone of the Ramones was born in 1951. That's great. You know, instead of coming up with a really clever name, just name the band after yourself.
Just do it.
Just be the Ramones. Because that's kind of a cool name anyway.
Speaking of Lance Armstrong, did you see where the marathon, like the men's marathon record, was blown this weekend? Somebody beat it by, I think it was about a minute and 20 seconds or something like that, which is apparently in marathon, like, really impressive.
You're talking about
like the men's marathon world record.
Bicycle?
World record.
Cycle?
No, just for running.
Running?
Yeah.
For running.
For running.
No.
Beat it by a minute?
In like 20 seconds. Yeah, it was unreal. That's what everybody was up in arms about it.
What?
Yep. All right, you could go look it up.
Well, no,
you don't
got to
believe
me.
I'm just kidding.
I believe you.
Gonna get the details on it.
Hey, I thought you were talking about maybe the triathlon.
It was the marathon, the men's marathon world record.
Okay, so where did they have a
which
marathon?
Is two? It was before. It was like 2 minutes, two
at
hours
Berlin.
And 2 minutes or something.
Okay,
yeah, it was in Berlin.
It was in Berlin that it happened. Obviously, the biggest running news. Blah blah blah. Eliud Kipchoge, okay, that's my best shot. He finished at a time of 2 hours, 10 minutes, and 39 seconds. That was a minute and 18 seconds off the men's marathon world record.
I'm sorry. I was thinking the mile.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah,
Gary's
no.
Gary's like totally somewhere else.
That can't be true.
No.
Okay.
Marathon.
All right.
Marathon.
All right. The last time a chunk that size was taken off of the record was 50 years ago. There was definitely a sense that we saw history in the making. Wow, that is pretty amazing. Athletic achievement always amazes me. Bill is on the phone. Hello, Bill.
A very good morning to you, Mrs. Miller, and to you, Dr. Beam. And Dr. Beam, before I get my two things to you, I want to ask Ms. Miller, have you attended this world at Transylvania or Tryon, North Carolina, this horse show going on? Because I saw this Emirates airline had flown in and got 500 horses there, and I just want you, after I hang up, just talk a little bit how familiar you are with that, and what is that, how different is that with what you do with your horses, if you don't mind. But I've been thinking about you all weekend, and matter of fact, if Dr. Beam hadn't told us that one of your kids were not sick yesterday and you were off, I thought maybe you had gone up there because they had to cancel it, postpone it until yesterday. So elaborate on that after I hang up, if you would allow me to. And I want to say to Dr. Beam that I agree with you on this hearing. I don't know how you can accuse someone of doing something, and then the Senate is going to have a public trial, and yet there's going to be no investigation on the allegations and no witness. So that's just a show that's going to further divide this country, because the Me Too generation are going to say yes because she said it is true. But yet, how are you going to have a public trial and there's been no investigation into the allegation? At least find out where the house was. She had bathing suits on. Well, there's a swimming pool there. So, I think this is not good for the country. And the second and final thing, I am proud of the liberal Democrats, because we had a tragedy down in Laredo, Texas, and those of us who lived in Mexico or Texas all our life on the border the serial killing by a border patrol of females being shot in the head and one escaped. And yet, thank God, nobody has made it, the liberals have not made it some type of you see. So I'm glad that we haven't turned that into a political fiasco. So I just thank God for that. And again, I thank you, both of you, for coming in and volunteering every morning. And Mrs. Miller, she really gives insight on information that's a little beyond what you're capable of doing sometimes, Dr. Bean. You're going to have to up your game a bit. So
thank you so much.
I appreciate that, Bill. I'll certainly try to do that. But you're not going to – look. If you think you're going to pay Hannah a compliment and have me come back at it in some way, no way. I'll just agree with you 100%.
Thanks, Bill.
Now, you want to talk about the horses?
It's the World Equestrian Games, which everybody around here calls the WEG. So they only happen every 4 years. It's a lot like the Olympics. They're the second highest attended sporting event in the world, second only to the Olympics. So they're a really big deal. We probably won't ever have them in Tryon again. If we do, it'll be a really long time from now.
And
so that's why it's
over,
a big deal.
Right?
No. It's a 2-week event. It just started sometime last week. It was a week ago, I guess. So the 11th is when it started. And so it'll go for 2 weeks. They had to delay some over the weekend. And but I have not been able to attend. Part of the reason is because the tickets are really expensive. So I think your average ticket was about $1,500. And the horses that they're flying in and that you're talking about, my horses are a couple thousand dollars, and these horses are hundreds of thousands of dollars. So there's a big difference between what my horses do and what these guys do. But, they do it. They're up there doing a lot of 3-day eventing. They're doing vaulting and they're jumping and long distance and, evident. There's all that kind of thing, dressage, that level of riding, which is it's all English riding, which I don't really, I know how to do. I did some jumping, et cetera, but that's not what my forte is. So
yeah, Bill asked you to compare. So it's kind of like T-ball compared with the World Series.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think of myself as being a little bit above T-ball, but no, that's a very accurate description.
Yeah. Oh, no. Look,
I know what you're saying. There's a big gap between what I do and what these guys do.
Well, it's their life. I mean, they poured their whole life into it.
Right, it is. These are really just athletes, and they did have a big mix-up last week, which is everybody's all upset about, which is they have an endurance race of a certain distance, and they have people along the way to tell you which way to go for the endurance race, and some of the guides told people the wrong way.
Uh-oh.
And partway through the race, they sent them back, and they ended up circling back to the beginning again, and it was very confusing. Everybody was in an uproar, and so the judges, because they didn't want everybody to have to run it again, decided that they would just say, okay, well, the distance that you went to that point, it was the end of the race kind of thing. And so anyway, it's never happened before. It's never been done before. Nobody really knew how to respond. So everybody's been really upset about it. But, I don't know, I'm just kind of, it is what it is. I don't know how you
did they just go out and get John and Fred off the street?
I don't know.
Have them go stand out there and say,
direct traffic.
Point this way.
I don't know.
This is Western North Carolina. There's no telling what.
Well, my favorite, though, is if you're going to the WEG and you're following the signs and it says main parking, is that you get off of 26 and you go on to 11 and there's main parking arrow, Prison Camp Road. I'm like, woo, you know what I mean? I mean, that's the...
Yeah, I'm paying $1,500 to go to the
really,
prison camp.
Really, really shady car lot that's right there. And you just kind of take a left, and then you're just like, I have no idea where I'm going. This looks like it just goes off into the middle of nowhere. And, eventually you get to Tryon, but Equestrian Center.
Here's how
anyway.
They start the races.
Yeah.
The shotgun out.
It's been a little bit, I think, wet, but most of their stuff is indoors.
Is it true that that the turnout has not been what everybody thought? I mean, people were saying there'd be 400,000 people at this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And now I read something the other day that said, no, that the attendance was down. And
well, I don't know, but when I tried to get on to buy tickets, there was like 2 tickets left. for the whole 2 weeks. And you could, what you did was you went on and you bought, see, each day was a different event and you did all day was that event kind of thing. And so you could buy tickets and, I mean, and I did see some cheap tickets. There was some for one day, which was vaulting, and it was like $160, okay? So there was some that were pretty, you know, cheap, but that was about three tickets that were that cheap. And everything else was in the $1,000 range, hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
If you see me coming off of $1,500, you can know that John Fogerty's in concert somewhere. Something really important.
But so I don't know what their numbers, their expected numbers were, but I do know when I went on and tried to find a ticket, there literally was maybe five tickets.
It's kind of high for barrel, racing.
Yeah.
Do they do barrel racing up there?
No. All those horses would have to be Mr. Ed, and they would have to get up there and sing and dance before I would pay anything close to that to go see it. All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. You're welcome to use that number. If you want to give us a call, stay with us.
And here are your hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Bean.
Kerry Livgren is having a birthday today. He's the lead singer for Kansas. Gary's pulled up a little Carry On Wayward Son here for you. Let's listen to a little bit of Kerry Livgren's voice here. Just the very beginning here.
Once I rose above the noise and confusion, just to get a glimpse beyond this illusion. I was soaring ever higher, but I flew too high.
Okay, happy birthday to Kerry Livgren today, who's celebrating, lead singer for Kansas. Rick wants to talk about Never Trumpers, and Everett wants to talk about Kavanaugh, so Rick's first. Go ahead, Rick.
More to the point is perhaps the people that are constantly thrashing the president, completely the conservatives. They have no tolerance at all for another point of view. It's like they are intoxicated with anger and hatred, which would lead me to believe that many of these people are directed by a demonic influence.
Wow. Mm. Who are you talking about that are
the Never Trumpers?
I'm talking about people that the comedians, a late night comedian, Democrats that have no tolerance, that Trump can do nothing good. Every word out of his mouth is scrutinized with anger and hatred.
Yeah. No, you're right about, well, look, the source of hatred, you know, visceral hatred. It comes from the enemy. I mean, that absolutely comes from the devil. We're not supposed to be consumed by hatred as believers. It's not that we don't get passionate about things, but we check our passions with the power of the Holy Spirit, where we depend on God to give us an opportunity to put those things in their proper perspective so that they don't foment into the kind of hate. What you see on the left is hate, unbridled hate, that keeps getting fed over and over and over, and eventually it leads to violence. It moves from the spoken word to action, and it's always a violent outcome. And that, you know, Antifa, Antifa, or whatever you want to call them, these people that go out and perpetrate violence just randomly because of the hatred that they have for the United States, for the social order that we have currently. And some people say we should give voice to these people, that we live in America, they deserve to be heard. People who are operating out of pure hate, I don't think we have to listen to that. I don't think we're supposed to listen to it. But anyway, Rick, thanks. I appreciate your call. Everett wants to talk about Kavanaugh.
Yeah, this hearing's been kind of a zoo from the beginning, but a couple things real quick. Murkowski, I know she's pro-choice, but remember that her father has tasted the bitterness of a false accusation right before an election. So she's not exactly one who's going to sit idly by and let somebody be railroaded just so that someone on the other side of the political spectrum can win a battle. She has seen that personally and has felt that personally. I think some people have forgotten that. Because her father was indicted on I don't know whether it was false charges, but the prosecutors were eventually themselves charged with corruption in that whole trial and prosecution. The other thing is too, frankly, Dianne Feinstein needs to be censured. Now, granted, I don't think that motion will ever go through
of course not.
The Senate, but she needs to be censured for what she did, because she had this information months ago. She could have brought it up where not only the person who is making the accusation, but the person who's being accused could have gotten a fair hearing and actually, you know, aired the grievances and tried to come to terms. And come to terms is probably not the right word, but, you know, have a discussion about, okay, is this really the person that she's talking about? Did this really happen? Do an investigation and those type of things. But she decided to wait literally right before the vote. That also tells me I don't think she believed these allegations, because she treated them so cavalierly. So, I mean, I just...
Well, here's the thing that I was... This is the take that I would give on it, Everett. I don't think any of the Democrats believe them. I don't think they care whether they're true or not.
That's right. I agree.
This is not... There's a couple of purposes. As I said, this whole thing is directed toward Corker, Flake, Collins, and Murkowski. They just have to flip a couple of them. If they can flip a couple of them through this nonsense, then they can prevent Kavanaugh from going on to the United States Supreme Court. The other thing that it's designed to do is to give cover for Democrats that are in red states that were won by Donald Trump by large majorities, that these right. senators can vote against Kavanaugh and then go back and have a valid reason to try to enunciate to the people in those states that maybe would vote for him. Whereas if they voted against Kavanaugh without reason, that could give them some problems. So they're giving cover to red state Democrats, as well as trying to influence these moderate, spineless Republicans to go in and believe this stuff, which is completely false, and vote against Kavanaugh. So yeah.
Well, I don't know. Did you hear the attorney for her, the accuser? You know, basically on one of the TV shows, she basically said, "My client has no obligation to provide any background or prove her charges for the lack of a better term." And I'm sorry, you know, you've got to provide some semblance of proof. I mean, for the starters of it, she hasn't even proved the date, time. I mean, none of that. How is a person supposed to defend him or herself if you don't have a date and time? He could have a diary for the whole year. I don't know what he does not, but he could have a diary for the whole year. But he can't even use that because she hasn't even tied it down to a particular day or even a month.
Well, no, it's possible. Right. If you have a date and a time, you can, the accused can say, "Wait a minute, I wasn't at that party because I was at so and so or somewhere else," and have an alibi. But you can't, you can't alibi an accusation that has no substantiation. And they know that. And this attorney, I mean, let that attorney walk into a courtroom and stand up in front of a judge and say, "I'm not going to present it." What do you mean present evidence in the courtroom? I'm not going to present any evidence. My client's under no obligation to present any evidence of innocence here. I mean, that is absolutely nonsense. But in the world that we live in, people accept it because they want to and they don't want to consider the alternative. Everett, thanks for the call. Ira, you're next.
Hey, Dr. Beam. Hi, Hannah. Here's what's going to happen. They're not going to show up for the hearing. The Democrats wanted to postpone this until they read a 144,000-page document, which takes months. They don't want to wait just till Monday and then say, "Oh, we had a postponement." They're going to have another postponement. She won't show up. She was sick. She couldn't get transportation. Something's going to happen. They're going to postpone it week after week after until finally someone's going to put a stop to it. But that's what I think is going to happen. There'll be no hearing this Monday.
Well, I'll go halfway with you. I think there's a possibility that she's not going to show. And I think if she doesn't, then Kavanaugh doesn't have to show. I think that if she doesn't show up, then the Republicans should call for an immediate vote and put the guy on the court. I think they ought to do it anyway. I think they should have kept on the schedule and ignored this and gone ahead and had the vote on Thursday. And if you didn't have Corker and Flake and Collins and Murkowski and, you know, people, well, the vaunted the Senate procedures and rules. Look, the left here is not playing by any kind of rules. I mean, you can't. How do you play by the rules in a playground where the other side is making up the rules as they go along? That's ridiculous. So if she doesn't show, and by the way, she hasn't accepted the invitation yet. I think she probably will. But if she doesn't, it wouldn't surprise me. And if she doesn't, they should call an immediate vote. In fact, they ought to vote on Monday. She doesn't come to Capitol Hill, have the vote on Monday, since it was supposed to be on Thursday. Ira, thanks for the call. Thoughts?
No, I think you're exactly right. I think that we have a case of where Republicans are just, you know, it's since when, I said this earlier during a break, but since when did your gender mean that you have more legitimacy to what you have to say? And there is none. And so she doesn't, if she can't bring forth evidence and she won't testify, well, then just because she's a woman doesn't mean that we should automatically believe her and put the axe on Kavanaugh. That's just not how the justice system here in America works.
Hashtag me too, though.
Well, I know. And but still, I stand by that. That's just not how we do things here. And you're exactly right. I think that we should say, you know what? It's supposed to be Thursday. She didn't show up. We're not going to have this. Throw the whole thing out and vote Monday.
You know, I'll give you an example of this. If you go back to Asia Argento, you know, she's this hashtag Me Too activist. She paid her sexual assault accuser $380,000.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, you're right. Mm-hmm. Women, they can make these attacks, but because of their gender, they mm-hmm. have to be believed mm-hmm. when we know for a fact
that women... And if you don't believe them, you hate women.
Right. Women have actually done this falsely before, mm-hmm. and they've been involved in their own sexual assault or sexual mm-hmm. misconduct episodes mm-hmm. that they've had to try to pay off.
Right.
In case in point, Asia Argento. Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. I want to talk a little bit about President Trump declassifying these documents. We'll be back.
And here are your hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Bean.
Pull up cut number 10 over there, would you, Mr. Producer? This is the story about President Trump declassifying 21 pages of documents from the FISA warrant. By the way, the FISA documents and applications, 412 pages. And the president's going to declassify 21 pages that have to do with Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and some of the others. Players, I think it's going to have something to do on these pages, not only with text messages. They're going to have the information that was redacted. Once it's declassified, will be able to be seen, and also with this dossier.
Information from Christopher Steele.
Yeah, Christopher Steele. All right, yeah, here we go.
President Trump ordering the declassification of 21 pages of an application for a surveillance warrant against former campaign aide Carter Page, text messages from disgraced FBI figures Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, as well as FBI reports on interviews with DOJ official Bruce Orr. Democrats like Nancy Pelosi say releasing classified material like this is desperate and dangerous. But Republican Peter King, a member of the House Intelligence Committee, tells Fox News at night,
"The American people will find out that there was no basis for these FISA warrants, that the important information was kept from the court."
A Justice Department spokesman says they are already working on the president's request. In Washington, Sean Lanchel, Fox News.
Carter Page told Sean Hannity Monday night, last night, that he said, "Look, this FBI investigation was incredibly stupid to begin with." He said, "My biggest concern is all the damage this did to the U.S. government and the mockery it made out of the Constitution and all of the wrongdoing that was done by various officials within the Department of Justice, the FBI, and the DNC." So we'll find out how mm-hmm. much of that is true, or at least we'll have a better idea about it once these documents are seen by mm-hmm. everybody.
Now, here's my question to you, though. Is this a good idea? Was this a good idea by Trump to do that?
I don't know. It depends on what's in them.
Yeah.
I mean, if it comes out that this is some kind of smoking gun mm-hmm. and that the American people look at this and can conclude with some reasonable, a surety of conclusion that this whole thing was a bunch of hoo-ha from mm-hmm. the beginning and that the FISA warrant information was insufficient on its face for Carter Page to be surveilled, which started mm-hmm. the whole Russia collusion investigation, along with Papadopoulos. Mm-hmm. If looking at what Christopher Steele said and what Lisa Page said to Peter Strzok and seeing it unredacted is enough to convince the American people that all of this has been a colossal waste of time and prove mm-hmm. that it was nonsense from the beginning, then yeah, it's probably. But if you're gonna take the extreme measure of declassifying documents,
right.
they better have something to say. Mm-hmm. And what I fear is that they're going to declassify these 21 pages.
And they're not going to have
And everybody's going to go, is that it? Really? Because so far, that's the response that we get to everything.
Yeah, with this investigation. And it's been like, okay.
This measure is pretty out there on the part of the president.
Right.
You usually don't declassify documents until years and years and years after the fact, when it no longer is it relevant. But this is in order to add fuel to the fire of the whole debate over the Russia investigation.
Now, is this a precedence, though, that you think is – do you think this is going to set a precedence to declassify information like this so early?
Sure. It's a precedent because it's happening. And will other
presidents – I guess, is it good or bad?
And
should we be concerned about that?
I don't know, Hannah. I mean, I'm just honest. I, like I said – If you have information that's classified that can shed light on a national debate that is very important, and particularly if it proves that false accusations have been made against innocent people. For example, Carter Page, I mean, he was the target of these FISA warrants, and there's been no charges brought against him. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong. And yet the United States government, the FISA court, issued a warrant for him to be wiretapped and for this investigation to go forward. Stuff like that, if it can prove that the government misbehaved and it leads to an accountability that causes us to rein in the FISA court and to make sure, because think about the implication here. The implication is the United States government, that the Obama administration, you'll use the tools of government to harass, investigate, and interfere with the 2016 election.
Right.
I mean, that's essentially what's on the table. Now, we know that the Obama administration used the IRS in a way that was
proven.
There's no question about that. That they went after these conservative 501c3 nonprofit groups to try to shut them up in the run up to the 2012 election. So if President Obama didn't mind doing that, then why should we think that he would mind using the Justice Department or the FBI or any other government agency to do the same thing in 2016 to make sure that Hillary Clinton gets elected and that his legacy gets protected? Mm-hmm. So if that's true, we need to know that. And we need to be able to prevent that from happening again, because people's faith in the government is at stake here. And I think we need to have faith in the processes. And if we've lost faith, you know, just like with President Nixon, a lot of people were beginning to lose faith in the system with Watergate. And yet we were able to recover from that, because eventually the information came out and Nixon resigned. Because he was part of a cover-up. I don't think Nixon was ever involved in the original break-in at Watergate, but he was obviously, he directed efforts to cover that up. And so, we can survive the truth. What we can't maybe survive is a lot of ambiguity and accusations floating around.
And rumors and nobody really knowing.
Nobody knowing. So let me circle back around to say that if this proves significant, then I think it's worth the possibility of setting a dangerous precedent for the future to restore people's faith in the government, if something comes of it. But if the president declassifies these documents and everybody looks at it and goes, really? There's nothing to see here. Then, you know, it's just another distraction. And I think I think that'll be bad for the country. And I think it will be setting a precedent for future presidents for something that did not result in significant change or call people into account who have done some pretty bad things, I think, in the run-up to the 2016 election. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
And here are your hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome back to the program. Thanks for listening today. So we're into the final segment here, and I missed a golden opportunity. If you'd have been here yesterday, I wouldn't have missed this opportunity, because you'd have looked at me and went, today's Constitution Day, so we have to talk about the Constitution. We were supposed to have Jim DeMint at North Greenville yesterday to talk about the Constitution in chapel.
Flow.
And we had an event scheduled last night that was going to be a constitutional scholar lecturing about the importance. I mean, and all of that got canceled, which just breaks my heart because I don't think we'll be able to get Jim DeMint back at a later date. Maybe we will, but I mean, that's definitely our loss. Mm-hmm. So thanks a lot, Flo.
I would have rode my boat up there to hear it. So.
Yeah, listen, we had to err on the side of caution.
Right.
Obviously,
no, you have to.
You know, we looking back, we could have done all of that.
Right.
But we couldn't know that, and we had to be sure we were protecting our students and our team, and we did the right thing. But I regret that we didn't get to do it. But I wanted to read, in light of the fact that I just didn't talk about that yesterday at all, Jenna Ellis wrote for the Daily Wire a really, really insightful piece on why the Constitution is important. And I want to read some of it to you. It's too long to do the whole thing. If you want to see it, Jenna Ellis at Daily Wire, you can go find it. But I want to go through some of this because she makes some excellent points here about why the Constitution is great. And she begins this paragraph by saying, "Our Constitution is not an incredible document because it is perfect or because it gives us rights that amount to freedom. It's an incredible document for precisely the opposite reasons. The founders recognized that human beings, in addition to being created by God and endowed with certain fundamental rights, are also flawed and given to our fallen human nature. In Federalist No. 51, James Madison ponders that very point, and the nature of government as enforced through man's propensity for wickedness. Our Constitution enables genuine freedom for Americans because it does not provide our rights, but rather gives government specific limited powers for the purpose of preserving and protecting our rights." That may be one of the best sentences that I've ever read as it relates to the Constitution. People are wrong when they say that the Constitution gives us rights. The Constitution does not. The founders were specific about that. They wrote that we have inalienable rights that are granted, as Thomas Jefferson said in the Declaration of Independence, by our Creator, and that those rights, government should be put in place to protect those rights, not provide them. She goes on, "Our chosen government is a constitutional republic rather than a democracy." Now, you've heard me say that a lot on this program. If you listen to this show, you know I never refer to the United States as a democracy because a democracy is mob rule by law. You get 51% or you have 100 people. If you get 51 of them, then the rights of the minority don't have to be considered in a full democracy. But under a constitutional republic, the rights of the minority are protected. Let me keep going here. Our founders wisely recognized man's propensity for corrupting power. If the ability to rule was vested in one king, and also collective society's propensity for gullibility and mob rule, if the ability for lawmaking was vested in sheer majority rule. So with careful consideration and much debate, our Constitution was signed in Philadelphia on September 17, 1787, and the specific powers were separated among the three branches of the federal government, legislative, executive, and judicial, and among the three layers of federalism, federal, state, and the people. The layers of federalism are the most often denied or forgotten in an increasingly overreaching federal government. Indeed, even if we recognize state powers, often government fails to recognize that our supreme law does not vest some powers of decision-making and governance to the people, meaning that the federal and the state lawmakers do not have all governing authority between them. It's an amazing system. Importantly, the powers given to government not only do not delegate rights to the people, but also do not delegate policy to the agents of government. The Constitution simply provides power to act, but it is not a perfect, unalterable distribution of powers. The founders recognized that this is an experiment, the truthful recognition of who we are as human beings and that our rights are pre-political is unchangeable. But the powers given to various branches and layers are alterable if one or more branch or layer becomes corrupt. And so you have Article 5, where the federal and state at the state level, Congress may impose propose amendments to the Constitution to redistribute or clarify or to actually foreclose powers. Now, they made it very difficult to amend the Constitution, but we've done that. I mean, we've amended the Constitution. How many amendments?
27
amendments to the Constitution. And think about what that involves. Two-thirds of the Congress. It involves two-thirds of the states individually voting to ratify any change to the Constitution. It should be really hard to change it, but we should have the ability. And the founders realized this, and it was a very wise decision that they made.
Wow, this is a great article, and I was actually just thinking about the fact. I was like, I'm sorry that I missed sharing it yesterday on Constitution Day, but I'll do it today.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's just a lot of information here that she's so on point here, and I think as a culture, we and I say this all the time, is we like to be intellectually lazy, and we like to be told exactly what's right and wrong, and we would like it if the Constitution said, this is your right, this is your right, this is your right, because that would make it easy, but the reality is it doesn't. And it says instead that we have to take responsibility for ourselves to know some of these things. And that's
right.
Hard.
It is.
And it's, you know, we have to have discernment and we have to have wisdom and we have to look at all the, you know, all of our choices in front of us and make right choices. And again, that's hard. And so as our nature and our base nature wants the easy way out, but in the long run, our founders knew that that wasn't the right way. And it may be the easy way, but it's not the right way because corruption leads that way.
Jenna Ellis wraps this up by saying this, and I just want to read the last part of this. This is an incredible system of government. I'm proud to be an American and today celebrate a document that recognizes that I'm a human being made in the image of God and that my rights come from my Creator. Because of our system of government and the delegated powers to the people to also participate in government, we must not shirk our solemn duty and obligation as citizens. We have the power to vote. We must use it in November. We also have the power to provide checks and balances for the government through our representatives in Congress and our state legislatures. One movement to utilize the state's powers in Article 5 would call for the state delegates to convene for the purpose of proposing amendments for term limits on Congress, balancing the budget, and providing judicial reform. We should all be able to agree that in 2018, those items are necessary to consider, and Congress isn't considering them on the federal level. This Constitution Day, and this was yesterday when this was published, do more than celebrate America. Use your specific delegated power within our government system to vote in the midterms and to support Article 5's Convention of States project. We the people are one layer of governance that must stand up and participate. That's absolutely true. Now, we can debate about whether it's a good idea to have a convention of states, because obviously when you open it, when you have a convention of states, it could go well and we could make significant changes that would forever affect the future of this country. That would be the good news. The bad news is it could go poorly and we could make decisions that would forever affect the direction of this country. And if the right people show up, and you change the Constitution in a way that undermines individual liberty and takes away some of the freedoms that our founders understood were so important, and that because there are a lot of people, by the way, in this country who don't believe in unalienable rights.
Right.
They believe our rights are granted by government, and they would love to get their hands on the Constitution, rip it up, rewrite it, and put their idea of freedom in its place.
That's right.
And I don't want that. So I'm a little sheepish about having a convention of states project, or about I'm not quite ready to dive into that unless I could be sure that the American people would make good decisions. And I just don't have that confidence right now. Maybe someday.
Yeah, I don't either at this point. But, you know, maybe someday, or I could be convinced of that. But.
Sure. All right. Well, that's all the time we've got for the show today. We appreciate you listening. We'll be back in the morning, and we'll see who knows what will happen through the course of this day. My phone will be blowing up, I'm sure, all day with Fox News alerts and other news services that I subscribe to. And tomorrow, we'll come back in at 7 o'clock, God willing, and we will talk about these things from a Christian worldview perspective. God bless you, and have a great day.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of his radio network, the Radio Training Network, or iHeartMedia.